journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year, that matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.
It is a What Podcast exclusive, a little road trip that we took up to Knoxville, Tennessee, to visit now our best friends in the world, and we hope they are yours as well.
Wasn't that crazy? I'm still sort of trying to get over.
Is what crazy? What
the trip?
What did we do, Barry?
Well, all I know is a week ago we had this crazy idea to ask maybe Ted Heinig, vice president of AC Entertainment, to be on the show.
Okay.
Called him and he said, you don't want to talk to me. How about I get you the two guys that booked the festival? Booked the lineup. And I, of course, said no. Who would want that?
You really drive a hard bargain. You really do.
Who would want to know how they pick the bands that are on that lineup?
Well, our rider was very long. We needed a lot of things to go right before we could make the trip all the way to Knoxville. And this is what we've got for you today. Today, we get to talk to the guys that actually booked the festival. So whether or not you're watching on YouTube, listening on Spotify, listening on your iTunes, or any of your devices, we appreciate you being a part of the What Podcast. That's Brad. I'm Brad. That's Barry. I'm Brad. Barry Corder.
I think that's right.
I'm Brad Steiner. So I guess this officially kicks off season three of a podcast.
Yeah, and that's why I thought Ted made sense. You know, let's start with the big cheese, so to speak.
Ashley like to
Capps
have,
we've had before.
We like to have somebody from the festival sort of set the table for us most times.
Set the table, and yeah, I mean, I kid, obviously, when he said, how about the two guys that booked it? Because we're still talking about that lineup, you know, and then to get the guys that did it. And
plus, he gave us the idea, which makes us much happier. We don't like... We ran out of ideas.
Yeah, no, it's terrific. What's your takeaway from that conversation?
Well, I mean,
you guys are going to hear. It's probably going to be, two parts?
It's a two-parter.
So much. They gave us so much time.
Yeah. They could not have been more generous with their time, could not have been more gracious. They gave us so much more information than I think that we ever could have asked for. It really is sort of a masterclass on how to do this. I mean, I don't really foresee myself ever starting a music festival, but if you're a nerd, and I'm guessing that you are about these kind of things, since you're listening to this, it's going to be a masterclass on how this all gets put together and includes like tidbits of information and some breaking news, too, through the two parts. And hopefully you like it because there's a ton in here to talk about. And so here's what's going to happen. It's going to be a two-parter, but if you are a Patreon, if you want to sign up to be a Patreon, thewhatpodcast.com, the Patreons are going to get the video in its entirety right now. If you are not a Patreon, we still appreciate you listening, but it's going to be a two-parter. We'll release the next episode next week.
And once these come out, we're on. We're every week, right?
Every
That's
week.
The plan.
Every week until, I sleep in one morning.
Let me ask you, though. The things that we've talked about over the last 3 years, mostly confirmed by our conversation, or were there some real surprises to you? Or I felt like we're pretty close. What we've been saying over the years, there were a couple of things. I was surprised that it's just two guys.
I was about to say that.
Right now.
Yeah, it's where it starts from the AC Entertainment building in Knoxville, the fact that it's really two guys. Now, they will talk. Look, the thing that I took away first and foremost the most was that they're very humble. They're insanely humble.
Yeah.
And I know that they really want to give the credit to a lot of other people. And that's just in their nature. They're going to, you know, say that, you know, management and artists are really great. And artists, you know.
Got lucky. Da, da, da.
Right.
Yeah,
and they're going to, you know, say really great things about the audience. And all these things are true. And I'm sure they have a great team that really goes through and helps them with hip-hop where they probably don't know as much, or a certain genre. Not saying that they don't know anything about hip-hop, but I'm sure that they want to give the credit to a lot of people. But that is pretty surprising. If it was me, if it was you and me doing it, I wouldn't be giving credit to anybody. I did this.
Yeah. That and the year-after-year planning that goes into it. Like they said, they're a year and a half they will start out. So they're already working on next year.
Right.
And just to be at, because you and I have been involved in planning events, and not to this level, but next level maybe. It almost seems like you have to start fresh every year, but they don't.
Right.
So they're already thinking 4 or 5 years out, even
maybe
with some of those big acts. Not this year, but you know,
well, I mean,
4 years. That was interesting.
Well, I mean, going back to a piece of news that I heard a few months ago, and that Coldplay was going to be out not only for this year but also in 2021 because of the way that they, you know, do their tour schedule. Now that definitely came true in 2020, but I don't know if it's you know going to work out in 2021. What I think that you can probably do a lot easier at this point right now is probably start marking people off of the list. And what I found to be so refreshing is when Steve started talking about how they're, you know, they have a idea what they want to do, but they can't predict the cycle. They can't predict who's going to be big. They really have to go with their gut. And I asked a specific question because I really do wonder how much of this is, you know, how much ROI they can get, return on investment, how much of it's data driven. And, you know, they acknowledge that some of it because they've got to sell tickets and make money. But the part where I think I'm most surprised is how much gut really plays into all of this. What does just, they know what the festival is and they know what the feeling is supposed to be. That they can see a band, feel it, hear it, and then know exactly where it's going to be for the rest of the festival.
Yeah, you got some great information, especially out of Steven, talking about the data. They definitely look at the data, but the other thing that stands out is the night before that lineup dropped.
Yeah.
And the week leading up, his wife is like, this is really good.
Yeah, and his response
before,
is, he's like, I don't know if this is very good.
The night before, he's like, is this going to be good or not?
You're going to enjoy this a lot. If you're a Patreon, we appreciate you. Man, we can't thank you enough. You get to see the whole thing in its entirety right now. For those that are not a Patreon, sign up if you want to, thewhatpodcast.com. Enjoy it. Our conversation with Steve, Ted, and Brian from AC Entertainment, the guys that put together the 2020 Bonnaroo lineup. Enjoy. This is one of the great honors in the history of the What Podcast. I can't believe that we're doing this outside of being inside a radio studio or at Camp Nut Butter. We very rarely take this show on the road, and I can't believe we've been invited to sit down inside the building where it all happens with the people that literally craft your Bonnaroo experience and create the feeling that you have every single year. I can't believe we're here, Barry.
I'm really excited about this. One of the things that I think separates us from maybe some other shows is that we try to go to the source and get the actual information when we can, rather than just sort of dealing, you know, rumors or our own thoughts and opinions, though we do that too. But we are actually in Knoxville, in the offices of AC Entertainment, the guys, the co-founders of the festival. We're here with Ted, Steven, and Brian. Brian and Steven are the guys that actually booked this lineup that we're so excited about. And Ted, you told me earlier in the week that tickets are selling really well.
It's been a great year so far.
And what we want to talk about today are the things that, like, how did it come together? How do you guys do this? And why does it seem like maybe this year is different than any of the others? So it's sort of you're going to let us look behind the curtain, so to speak.
Yeah, because this is a really hard thing to do. You know, it's a very difficult thing, and I'm sure it started so long ago, and you get to see it on paper be delivered like a week and a half ago. I can't imagine what that feeling is like when you finally get to hit enter or send on an email. Done. I'm absolutely done with it. I guess how long ago did it start putting what happened on paper and in our eyes and on our phone? When did that start? When did that process start for 2020?
You know, the process, it's changed over the years. It didn't used to be really as long of a process as it is now. Mm-hmm. But I'd say we work on the lineup for probably, it's close to a year and a half, basically. So we will start booking the next year's Bonnaroo well before Bonnaroo actually plays through. So, for example, Bonnaroo 2019 in June, we will have started on the 2020 lineup well before that.
Right.
And in fact, we're already conceiving and getting to work on 2021 right now.
One of the things I think we want to do is ask and then answer the questions that people out there listening to this podcast might have. and that was one of them that you had asked Jeff Cuellar, is this idea that if we can't get an act this year, maybe we can get them next year. And I think that some people think, you guys just sort of walk in, sit down at the table with a wish list, and then go and get it. And it's not that easy, is it?
No, it's not. It does not work that way at all. Obviously, there's lots of factors that play into whether or not ultimately ends up on the lineup or not. And we can talk about some of those if you'd like. But it's an intense process. It's one that is it's a daily process for Steve and I going through it. We get thrown curveballs all the time. In terms of booking far out, I think if we could book this thing, the closer to the lineup announcement we could actually book all the bands, the better, right? Because the more information we have about what is out there that's happening, that's hot, that's exciting in that moment, the further out you are, it's so hard to project ahead. I don't know really what the next great, jam or hip hop or electronic act is going to be in June of 2021. I don't know that yet, right?
I don't even know what the cycle's going to be like. I don't. A year and a half from now.
But there are some givens there, yeah, right, that we know that are usually the artists that are going to be near or at the top of your lineup every year that we can start to work on. And in fact, a lot of those acts, some of the bigger named acts that you see play Bonnaroo, sometimes we have to work on that years out, if not 5-6 years out. Some of the biggest artists that have ever played the lineup, those are manifestations of conversations that we've had for 5-7 years in regards to planting the seeds, going and taking meetings with artists themselves and their managers and their agents and their representatives, asking them to come. And this was true, especially in the early days of the festival. We would ask people to come because we firmly believe there's nothing like this event. Not in the country, but really in the world. I mean, this festival is, there's nothing like Bonnaroo. And so we would ask artists and agents and managers and representatives, just come see it, come see it for yourself, come experience it, come understand it, come see the production, come see the stages, come see the fans, because that's the number one thing. That's our number one selling point to artists, is we have the best audience in the country.
Yeah, I'm betting early on when you were booking this, when you asked acts to come to Manchester, Tennessee in June, you got a lot of, why in the world would I want to go and sweat my rear end off there?
That definitely happened on a number of occasions, right. A lot of times that would really set the stage for us to land an act, whether it be the next year or the following couple of years.
So it still happens. We do have some anecdotes of people being like, "Why should I come play this festival in the middle of nowhere, Tennessee, in the middle of the summer?" And then you just, you try to explain it, and you try to, sell the story and tell the story.
It's amazing that people still need to be told the story. But to reset the table for a little bit, first off, when you guys go to put together whatever it is that you put together for, whether or not it's Big Ears or Bonnaroo, is it done in this room? Or is it done over your phones? Or is it done at a show? Where does it all come
together?
It's
everywhere. Yeah. It's constant. I mean, Brian and I are constantly in communication about Bonnaroo. For instance, you ask about like timeline and like when we book it and things like that. I mean, in September had King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard play a show in Asheville outside. And I'd seen this band, listened to them. We've, talked about them for Bonnaroo. But when I went and experienced that show, I was there and I was like, this band has to play Bonnaroo this year. And it has to play, I'm giving something away here, but late night at Bonnaroo. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a must for this year. And that was there. And I don't remember if I texted you or Slacked you or emailed you or something while it was happening. And so it's constant. It's constantly, it's in our offices, it's in this room, it's in Ashley's room, it's at dinner, it's at a show,
and
it's driving, we're out,
And you know it's going to be a certain time of day because it's just a feeling that you have, right? But where did that start? How long have you guys been in this building, crafting this experience, making my festival what it is? How long have you guys been doing it?
How long have we been doing it?
Yeah.
Individually? Well, we've been in this building for only 2 years.
Physically here.
Yeah.
But like,
promoted like 2 years ago out of the slums into this life.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, as far as like, when did we start? Our personal Bonnaroo story?
Yeah.
No, yeah, each of you. How many years have you been booking?
Oh, well, when did we start? Like, Brian and I...
Honestly, I have no idea.
I can't remember when we were brought into the booking process at Bonnaroo.
We've each been on the Bonnaroo booking team for over a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. So we've been a part of it in one way, shape, or form for...
Yeah.
It's probably been longer than that, really. Yeah. Honestly, I can't remember what year it was each of us started on the booking side.
So when you say the booking team, how many people does that encompass?
That's a good question.
Yeah. And it's changed over
Exactly. That's why it's a tricky one. The festival for a long time was booked by actually a committee of folks that Steve and I were a large part of. We had obviously our colleagues at Superfly, and they were very much a part of that process as well. And they would have folks from their side, and we would join together. Each team would come with ideas, and we would collaborate, and that would be a couple of times a week. Sort of a process that would, somehow, some way, even some years we don't even understand how we did it, but it would spit out a somewhat coherent, if not incoherent, lineup.
Yeah.
And obviously that's not how it's done anymore because, Superfly not being involved. But, just to speak to recent history, the last 2 years have been essentially... Steve and myself calling shots and making the moves. Yeah.
So,
and then real quick though, we got to throw this out there. Bobby Clay from C3, he does the programming for the other stage, which we launched how many years ago? I can't remember now.
Four years ago. Something like that.
Yeah. So he's the mastermind behind the,
He does a great job.
The EDM stage. You know.
Now I know each lineup is sort of like a child for you, but I'm guessing you're insanely proud this year.
Well, we're proud of every year, but especially this year. I'm really happy with how it came together. Obviously, we've been elated to see the response from the fans, the community, the press. Everybody's really kind of rallied around this one, and I just think it speaks to the overall balance of the bill, and that is obviously what we strive for every year.
Right.
We want a really balanced lineup. We want people to feel like there's all kinds of different music showcase. We want people to feel like I can only see this lineup on the farm in Manchester. Right. And that really is, it's one of the things that we pride ourselves on.
That's one of the things that we talk about all the time, that there are certain bands that you can just see in your head at Bonnaroo, maybe on the what stage at 3 p.m. or even 3 a.m. My Morning Jacket is a perfect Bonnaroo act, in my opinion. There are just some acts that even when you hear them on the radio, maybe you can just picture, you can just picture them on the farm. But what is the simple mission of the festival? What does management want from you guys in regard to booking the festival? Do they give you any sort of guidelines or anything in particular? And of course, as we agreed, there are Bonnaroo bands, that, and I assume that means there are some that maybe aren't Bonnaroo bands.
Well, it's hard to answer. First of all, I'll say that from a management perspective, and I think this is a real credit to how Bonnaroo's structured and set up. Steve and I pretty much have creative freedom to book this thing the way we feel like we need to book it. And that really enables us to, put together the best lineup that we possibly can with little to no restrictions, really. And that's a great place to be. In terms of a mission, it's hard to put into words. I'll only say that you know, because we have been a part of the planning and booking process for the lineups of this festival for over a decade, probably 12, 13, mm-hmm. 14 years, we just kind of know what it is that we want or that we're trying to do out there. And, you know, every year the lineup takes on a life of its own, and it's just kind of how it should go, you know. And it kind of all depends on who we think we're going to end up with, usually at the top. That a lot of that, you know, the headliners do in some ways dictate the undercard.
Really?
Because you know, if we're going to say Tool is going to be an anchor of our festival this year, and we don't have any other bands right. on the bill that Tool fans want to yeah. see, then we're not booking properly, and we're not putting together the best lineup that we possibly can, and really catering to the audience of the headliners. It's not all done that way, but we definitely think about things like that a lot.
So how much of that is data driven versus your heart or your head? It's a head versus heart argument, right? So how much are you looking at data and maybe where it's succeeding somewhere else, or how much is it is, I just saw this show and I've got to have this on the farm?
It's both. I mean, we look at data for sure, but we also follow our hearts, mm-hmm. you know, because there are, if you just look at raw data, there's acts out there that are way bigger mm-hmm. than the acts at the top of our festival, but don't necessarily make sense right. at Bonnaroo.
Fit that overall
Bingo.
Mission.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, Lizzo's numbers are insane this year, but when we first started talking about Lizzo, you know, we were kind of, you know, she was big, mm-hmm. but we were taking a bit of a leap of faith, and a big part of that was based on our gut and our heart right. and looking at this act and being like, could there be a better Saturday night main stage headliner this year than Lizzo, like on Bonnaroo?
Well, yeah, you took a gamble and it worked, because there's nobody more of the zeitgeist and more of what I think the Bonnaroo mission is from afar is yep. than what Lizzo is. And at what point did that change where you said, well, we'd like to have her, but then all of a sudden became, no, she needs to headline?
I don't know what exactly at what point. I think that, you know, in terms of when we were discussing booking her for 2020, it was almost always in that sort of headline area.
That's true.
And you know, we could see where it was going. You know, and obviously, you know, we kind of had a feeling that, you know, if we did headline her and she was going to be at the top of the poster come January, that was going to be a pretty smart move.
Yeah.
And turns out, I think we were right.
I'm just fascinated as to when that happened. Like, was that like October or September? You know, it's like one of those things, because you had to really foresee something big happening. And the only reason I say that is because, now I don't mean to do this, but I know Barry is going to kill me. This is a lineup built all for Brad, because there are landmines of me patting myself on the back way too much in this lineup. But Lizzo, I was lucky enough to be the first person to ever play her on the radio, and I found her on this blog, right? And this was last October, and she loved it so much that she repaid us by coming to play a show just in Chattanooga for free, and that was in May. And in May, she already had her management telling me that they were going to be doing arenas by the end of the tour. So if they foresaw it, I wonder how much of the conversation then changed when she was going to be booking all of 2020. So a year and a half out, she was already saying, no, we know exactly where this is going. And I wonder how much of the conversation that was with you guys.
Well, if I could just jump in for a second, I think Benson actually booked Lizzo first on one of our festivals in like 13 or 15.
Yes, it was 2016.
Was it 2016?
I don't remember.
Maybe
the year 14, she played.
Something.
I don't.
It was a long time ago.
You're talking about when she played Forecastle, yeah.
Yeah, Forecastle, and it was the first festival that Lizzo played in the United States.
Yeah.
So when you, I think one of the things for Bonnaroo fans to really understand is that Steve and Brian have decades plus experience booking, and it's not just on Bonnaroo. We do eight or nine festivals this year. It's kind of hard to keep track of it. We're booking in general between festivals and shows over 1,000 shows a year. So you get in deep and start to develop these relationships with managers and agents and artists, and then it just becomes part of your DNA.
Right.
And kind of like what you do with your life is like be a part of this. And then all of it just starts, it's like you're in the Tennessee River and you're just kind of going in a direction with the entire, like all of these people. So really, when I think about what these guys did incredibly getting Lizzo on Bonnaroo as a headliner, which I think is a big moment beyond just the music. It really started at the beginning because of the relationship that we had with Lizzo's manager and agent and giving her a chance on this other festival. And that's really what it takes. Like with all the artists, like everyone doesn't have a story like that.
Right.
But many of these stories start at the beginning or start with what Brian was saying 5 or 6 years ago with, hey, we really think this would be an important look for your career at some point to come headline Bonnaroo. Let's start the conversation and see what that looks like.
Yeah, and along those lines, I'll go ahead and ask the question because I know some people are wondering, but Lizzo is the first female headliner in Bonnaroo history. And when Brad mentioned that to me last year, I was like, really, that doesn't seem right. It just kind of snuck up on me. And I wondered if that's how it was sort of for you guys. I mean, I don't think it was intentional. You just sort of maybe looked up and like, wow. How did that happen kind of thing? So, you know, here we are 18 years down the road, and now she's the first.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, certainly, you know, reaction-wise, that was part of it. But, you know, it's obviously, you know, she's the perfect fit for us this year. And we're elated that she's, you know, she's the first one to top the list there, for sure.
Yeah, that's kind of what I mean. You look around and you think, well, okay, who should it have been? And what year? Because you booked the best acts available, right?
We booked the best acts available, and first female headliner, sure. First attempt at a female headliner, definitely not. Right. You know, and so I think that, you know, that it's, you know, obviously booking a festival is, like we kind of alluded to at the beginning, it's a process. It's literally it's putting together a big puzzle. And there are lots of reasons that acts do or do not end up on the bill. And this is, you know, this is the first time that happened.
So when it comes to where artists are put on the lineup, do you guys specifically know where they're going to fit, what slot they're going to be on the poster / the schedule? When you say, yeah, Lizzo could definitely be a headliner, but so could Miley. Was there a conversation of, well, let's flip those? Or did you know all the time, the whole time, that this certain artist was going to fit this certain slot?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, okay. We know. Right. We know. That's how we book the festival. And that's an interesting question. And, you know, we slot artists as we book the event. And we do it that way because we are very sensitive to conflict in the schedule. And we do everything we can to limit those as much as possible. Whenever you have a festival that has multiple stages that are running congruently or up against one another, especially the size of Bonnaroo, where you have 5, 6, 7, 8 stages going at once, there's gonna be conflicts. There's conflicts that we don't think are conflicts that then the fans tell us are conflicts. Yeah, so. And then we're like, oh, that was going to be a conflict. But, you know, and, you know, a conflict could be, you know, 10 people just happen to like these two bands that are way different. Right. Or it could be like, oh, we really blew that one, you know? So, but yes, we slot artists as we book.
How much wiggle room do you have? When it comes to, if you already book with the schedule in mind, how much wiggle room do you have either with the artist or with your own sort of, because I can understand if somebody all of a sudden blows up in a way that you didn't really see it, and all of a sudden you're like, oh, we got him on this tent in a time that's really not very comfortable for us.
Well, those conversations happen. You know, they're rare, but they do happen. We've run into that in the past. I think the first time we ever booked Mumford, I remember, it was kind of this thing that just kind of happened over. I mean, they exploded so quickly, and the you know, we had them on Bonnaroo that year, and when we confirmed them to when the festival actually happened, it was a rocket ship.
Yeah.
And I remember having to make some adjustments there. And those are tough conversations because you know every artist is slotted at this point. And so to have to make adjustments on the fly because of an artist getting a lot bigger, you know, then you have to go have some tough conversations with some of the other artists, but we work through it.
Yeah. Right.
And during the and that's now, but the process is fluid, like while we're booking it, because things ebb and flow. Artists that we thought we were going to have fall out. Artists that we didn't think we were going to have rear their heads, and we're like, oh, we really want that. So, you know, we may have something slotted in a particular place in October, and then it makes more sense, or it's more exciting, or whatever, to move it to a different place by November. We do that, and it's a constant conversation with the artists and their camps.
And most of the time, they're okay with it.
Most of the time, but we rarely are doing something that's going to have a negative effect on any of the artists. Like if we're moving something, it's rare, like Brian said, that it's because we booked. You know, I think Phoenix was another one that we booked on, like what we used to call the cafe stages. You know, like Who stage now, and then it was like, oh, we should probably move them to a tent. You know, that same year. It's rare that that's happening, or the Mumford story is happening. It's more about flow and the festival experience.
Right.
So, generally speaking, when we're going back to somebody and being like, hey, we would like to move your act to this new position, it's not just because. Mm-hmm. There's like a good reason for it. And, you know, if we believe in it, then generally we can, you know, convince the artists and their teams that it makes sense.
Yeah, and hopefully by this point, there aren't any changes. That would be ideal.
Yeah.
But throughout the process, the way our grid looks changes every day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a matter of, an agent calls and says, hey, oh, we can only play on Sunday now.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, we've got to move some things around. So this is constantly happening. Or we have an artist slotted in a slot and it's an offer that isn't yet confirmed, and then they don't confirm. And so that opens up a spot, and then we have a new decision to make. And this is really where, I can't stress enough how much fun we have doing this together, because it's really, when you get down to it, it's, we really do it. Like if we have a slot open on Friday in a tent, we really look at, all right, what do we have that's confirmed in this slot on the other stages? What do we need there? What could we put there that is going to fit, you know, with the mix of other artists that are going to be playing at that time, you know? And that's really where we have a lot of fun with it. And that's really where we get to play curator, you know, and really place,
creative,
hey, what would be really cool? What if, and this is where we get together. What if we did this right there? Let's reach out and let's see if that act's available. And this is where we really get to, piece
it's
together
a
the bill.
Three-dimensional Spotify playlist, really.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
And the biggest challenge is, or one of the biggest challenges is, you know, it's almost like the blessing and the curse, right? We're blessed with the fact that we are lucky enough to get to book one of the best festivals in the world that almost every artist in the world wants to play. The curse side of it is that every artist in the world wants to play it, and we only have 100 and whatever slots that we have.
Are you getting calls now saying, hey, can we get on today?
Well, it's calmed down a little bit at this point, but you might imagine the intensity level from, say, July to January.
Yeah, I mean, there is a level, though, that if, I don't know, just say Jay-Z called up, you're like, you know, we might might be able to slot you in. We might be able to fit you in.
And I'm not... We got a spot.
Yeah, we always have a spot for Jay-Z.
I don't say that complaining at all. I'm just saying we have a lot of options, and it can be a little daunting sometimes to say what's the right choice. Yeah. Because a lot of times... we're choosing, between a bunch of artists that we want them all on.
Yeah, I'm just sitting here thinking about some of the things that can affect whether you get an artist. I'm sure when you were talking to management, you want to know if they're going to have a new record out, if they're going to be touring. Those things kind of things can impact radio play and marketing. But I'm thinking about like Macklemore a couple of years ago, came back for the second year. He had a new album out, and we all sort of thought maybe, you guys were counting on it doing really well, and it didn't do as well, and that can impact it. And that's maybe one of the negative sort of things. But then you've got, like, St. Paul and the Broken Bones, where he's booked, and he goes on Letterman, and Letterman just goes gaga over him. You don't see that coming. You can't count on that kind of thing. You didn't know when you booked Lizzo, for example, that she was going to get 8 Grammy nominations. But you have to sort of be able to adapt, right? So the idea that you start booking a year and a half out is fascinating to me. Because then you got Tool, acts like Tool, who are always going to be good.
That's a big part of it, is that it's like those huge acts, because that's their, that's how far out they plan. So a lot of the undercard is still like, that's booked later. But those big ones are, it's driven.
Now, about the undercard, how many of the undercard, and you don't have to tell me a number, you don't even have to answer if you don't want to, but how much of the undercard comes along with some of the bands you've booked at the top?
Meaning, like...
Yeah, like, hey, can you help us out with this? Can you, if we give you an insert artist here, can we throw in a couple of help us out?
Yeah, we just don't really do it that way.
Okay.
If we're excited about an act and we think they fit the festival, we try to book them. Yep. I mean, it's really. I mean,
has there ever been a band?
I don't mean to oversimplify
that.
That's
actually true. Like, yeah. we don't like it, it. The package deal is not.
But there's never been a band that you booked that we didn't really listen to them. We sort of put them on there. That would be kind of funny. You're like, we have a slot. Let's just throw them a bone.
I'm being very sincere here. No.
That's awesome.
No, we
somebody has listened to him.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Somebody in the building. It. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, sure. Again, you can answer how you want to, but and forgive me, there was alcohol involved at Moon River when I suggested that you get alcohol.
I thought you were going to talk about Camp Nut Butter as soon as you said alcohol.
Well,
I don't know what Camp Nut Butter is.
That's
by
our
the
camp.
Way. Okay.
We want you to come back this year. You can.
Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, sure.
I bet you get this. You guys get this all the time. To make them upset, I know who you should vote.
Uh huh.
You know
that never happens,
baby. Dolly is one of those, and I'm using her just because she's on top of everybody's list. Such an obvious. I'm sure you get people say, why aren't you booked? Mm-hmm.
It's that easy, right?
Remember when Brian said earlier that Lizzo's the first headliner, but not the first that we've tried?
Right. Probably an every year thing.
It's
I'm asking this is maybe a good example for somebody out there who doesn't understand how these things are booked, right? You are trying. There's lots of things that happen from whether she just wants to, the money, the timing, right? I mean, what are the sorts of things that you are up against when you want to go after somebody you want?
Oh, it could be a bunch of things, Barry. The date doesn't work, not working in that time frame, not the right time for their career, not on cycle.
They have to want to do it.
You have to want to do it. Don't in the money, or our financial offer doesn't match their expectation. Or we just don't have the right slot or position for them in that moment. I mean, there's I could go on and on. Yeah. So many things have to go right for a booking to happen, especially when you're talking about the top 10 to 12 artists on the bill. And it's just, again, it's a long process that Steve and I go through. And again, we want to make sure that it's as balanced as possible. And that's kind of how we do it.
And all that being said, we would love to have Dolly. Sure. Out there,
right. We'll probably building the 2020
we'll probably try. We'll probably try again next year. So,
I think one thing to note, and this is one of the things I wanted to make sure to mention. Going back to your question about data, you know, we do look at a lot of data, mm-hmm. But that's across the board. This is what we do for a living. We book bands. Not only at festivals, but we book, you know, regular shows as well. And we're looking at a lot of data. We have conversations with our marketing team and our data team a lot about the numbers and what the fans are excited about. And this is one of the main points I wanted to make. We look at the survey and the poll results a lot. You know, so if you fill out a post-festival survey, if you attend Bonnaroo and you fill out that survey about who you want to see in 2021, that is actually to the bookers of the festival, and we actually are looking at that. We're taking that data into account, and we're looking at it very carefully.
Yep.
And it's one of the things, like, obviously Tame Impala has been one of the most requested artists for the festival for years, but they were ostensibly the number one most requested artist to play Bonnaroo in 2020.
No
kidding.
We would have probably booked them regardless, but that was important to know.
Right.
King Gizzard, going back to Steve's comment about having seen them in Asheville, but we also knew, because the Bonnaroo fans told us, they wanted to see them play out there. And
has the Bonnaroo audience turned you on to a band that you didn't know before, that you then went to see and said, man, this was something I didn't know until they were told to me?
Probably. I mean, I would say I can't think of any specific examples, but there's probably something we've seen in there.
Or things that we've thought, things that we've maybe had heard but never delved as deeply into or put together. I mean, because it's not just like the surveys and things like that, but we look at the socials, the Reddit, like all the, you know, all of that stuff. Like we're listening to the fans.
I would say it's less of a been turned on to something we didn't know, and maybe more of a we weren't maybe thinking that we were going to prioritize that act as much as we will now, because we know the Bonnaroo audience is really saying we really want to see him out here.
Do you feel that way that specific to Bonnaroo, because the engagement and the audience is so active 360 days a year? Is that why it is? Because I can't think of another brand that has sort of a connection that is so right there along with their hand in hand with their audience.
More with Steve, Ted, and Brian from AC Entertainment here in seconds. This is just such a fascinating conversation. There's so much more that we want to get to, and I hope that you're following along the whatpodcast.com or the what podcast or the what underscore podcast on Twitter. Barry Corder, we've got some Patreons to thank before we keep going with the guys from AC.
These guys are great, right? I mean, we just put this thing out there last month, and wow, the reaction has been amazing.
Yeah, we
can't thank you guys enough.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I mean, people in my family don't like me this much. So
they know you.
I really appreciate it.
If you Patreons knew him like I knew him, you know.
Yeah, sure. All right, so this is what we got. So since January, we've got Dan Sweeney, Lucy Young, Linda Doles, Chelsea Davis, Jason Hazelbaker, and Ella. Let's get back into our chat with the guys from AC Entertainment about the 2020 Bonnaroo lineup on the What Podcast.
To go back to your question, the level of engagement from the audience is it's incredible. And it helps us. So I would just say, look, if you're watching or listening to this right now, please, we want the feedback, because we look at it, it gets to us, we see it, we take it into consideration as best we can, and we do. It really helps us craft the lineup every year.
See, this is why
it's not the only thing that we look at, but it is a data point that we have and that we see and that we take into consideration.
But see, this is why I think that the most successful brands in the world put their brand values up front, and then they show them to you, and then they actually live them on a, you know, very regular basis. The reason why we do this show is because we love the brand so much, we love the values so much, and if those things are, and I have no reason to doubt you because you've proved it, but when you say stuff like that and then you actually live it, that's showing how much your brand value means to the user. And if that's the case, the user experience becomes so much more authentic and real and connected to the overall festival. I mean, that's why we do this. That's why we do this show, and we that's why we engage on a 15-year level that we have, you know?
And that's why we're sitting here with you, right, you know, yeah. because we want to not be faceless necessarily, you know, because we take a lot of pride in booking this event. Yeah. We don't take it for granted, and we understand, I mean, the it's a daunting task, really. And it's, and again, going back to the process, it's one that really almost never stops.
Right.
You know, we never are not booking Bonnaroo yeah. in a way, right? Because sure. even though we may not be making a ton of offers right now for 2021 because it's so far out, but we're always exactly. yes. thinking about, totally. Yeah. you know, I'll probably pop into Steve's office after this in an hour and go, oh, I just had an idea for, yeah. for yeah. And that's the constant dialogue that we have, and we're always thinking about what are we going to do next.
Yeah, I want to go back to what Barry asked before, because I don't think
yeah.
you guys ever really answered it, but he was talking about what's the mission, just kind of from the 30,000 foot view, because I'm not doing any of the heavy lifting.
You're the mission guy. Yeah,
maybe I'm the mission guy. But like, I think what's important is that from just this conversation, it's the relationship between the booking, what we do with marketing, what we do with experience, what we do with our partners at C3 to really set the stage so this is amazing for everybody. But then these two guys have to go out there and really live it, and they're not just trying to put together a relationship that at the end of the day sells tickets. They're trying to, they're looking in the mirror and just want to be super proud of what they've done, because it's almost like you're married to the Bonnaroo fans. Like, there's a relationship there. It's very different from a lot of other things. So these two guys are doing like tons of work all year long with an expectation, not just to put it out there, but how the fans and how people who are Bonnaroovians are going to respond to it, and really trying to create something that they're going to delight in, not just like and buy tickets to, but just be so psyched that this 4-day festival is like the highlight of the year.
I love how you just said it's like a marriage, because if you're married, you have to make your partner happy damn near every day.
Yeah, right? or just yeah, like a deep relationship.
And this ties into what you, I think you were asking a second ago too, about like the like who's on the bill and like how is it different from booking other festivals, because we book a bunch of other festivals. But like marriage, you want to make your partner happy most all the time. Yeah. That starts at when you get up in the morning, when you go to bed at night. At Bonnaroo, it starts with the first band that plays on a tent and the first act that finishes at 4 a.m.
Yeah, we talk about the experience and how important that is. It seems like a little thing maybe, but 2 years ago, leaving the Moon River Festival, which you guys do, and seeing Jeff Cuellar in a banana costume, it seems like such a little thing, but you leave there with a smile on your face. And those little things add up. You know, we've all heard the comments that it started as a jam band festival and it has changed. Some people think not for the better, but things like grass and shade and bathrooms, they've definitely changed the festival. So how much does that total experience and having things like the plazas play into what you guys
the plazas the you plazas, now have to book now.
That's but no, and but again, that's like, this is really important because we live and breathe these stages and the bands on the poster and things like that. But that's not all Bonnaroo is. It's the experience and the plazas. Like, you know, our friends at C3 do the programming, majority of the programming at the plazas. And those plazas, I mean, have changed the experience completely. Or Where in the Woods, or all these new things that make it not just about the bands on the stage. It's all a big, huge experience from start to finish. You know, that's a not really... On, yeah,
that,
please.
That changes who you're now marketing to, right? That's
absolutely.
Thinking about, you know, who could play there.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah. It all fits together. And, you know, who, like, Sunday morning on a stage, you know, what do you want to see after you've maybe
Brad
been...
Has an idea.
maybe been up till 4 o'clock in the morning dancing at Where in the Woods. You know, it all sort of bleeds together. And like, you know, what do we have on Sunday morning? I don't remember right now, but like, it all like fits together as a whole.
Sunday at one on the wet stage, I really want to go to church every year. The days of like the Mavis Staples the Sharon Jones and the Charles Bradley. Oh, I miss that slot so much. I really do.
When the lineup came out, we were all stunned, and it was Miley Cyrus. I mean, the lineup was so strong. Seeing Miley on there.
We got to throw a wild card in there every year.
Right.
Like, who gets to take credit for that? Because it was
I don't know.
I was just like, from my perspective, I think that Miley gets and her team gets a lot of the credit because this, you know, is just an example of an artist that really has some incredible vision. And I think, let's take it back because it all ties together. It takes it back to the Bonnaroo fans and how they're perceived, not just by our relationship with them, but by artists around the world as the number one music fans who are tastemakers, who can create trends, and who can really set the stage for a career to take a different path. Mm. And I think Miley wanted more than anything, without speaking to her, to get in front of this audience and, you know, experience what they're like and take it, you know, just take it to them.
That's interesting. I've got two questions about Miley, one not necessarily about Miley, but when... You know, she's going to be on some other festival lineups. Indirect question, do you guys look at other festival lineups around the country, you know what's coming, and you say, they're doing everything, that doesn't really where we want to go? And then secondly, about Miley specifically, you think that she has a little bit more of a want-to for Bonnaroo and prove something on the Bonnaroo stage because it's hometown? Do you think that she's, you know, an hour away from her house and has got some friends that she wants to bring? She wants to bring a different level of show maybe for Bonnaroo because it's so close to home?
She definitely wanted to play the festival. I don't want to speculate on her motives because I don't know the answer to that. But I can imagine it's going to be a high-level show from her at Bonnaroo, you know, given the hometown vibe and ties. But yeah, I think, you know, again, it goes back to something that Ted said earlier, you know, artists, you know, we like artists that want to play, you know, we like artists that want to be at Bonnaroo, and, that's not always the case, believe it or not. And that's okay. But you know, the ones that really embrace what we're trying to do as a festival, as a, you know, what we're trying to deliver to the fan base, what the fans expect, those are the ones that really excel and do really well at the event.
And to jump back to your first question about Miley and like, she's playing other festivals.
Right.
Yes. We do pay attention to who's playing other festivals. We can't control it. And we don't always know. We do want to have our own identity, but we don't let that like drive the programming completely. But again, you know, the interesting thing about Bonnaroo is, Miley Cyrus is on a lot of different festival lineups this year, but it's going to be a totally different experience the way we present her at Bonnaroo than the way she's presented at most other festivals.
When you guys
it
get...
It just looks different. The experience is different. You know, I think the fan reaction will be different.
Yeah, you know, you just... I wonder... I circle back and, you know, I wonder if there's ever a time where you see a band that's just doing everything. And you're like, that's just... We don't want to be just another festival that you play. You know, anyway, but to a different point, when you guys book insert Miley, or I'll put it this way, I was having a conversation with Evan down the hall. I think that, and I don't know if this was on purpose, but I think your headliners alone are going to bring maybe the best three stage shows that you have ever had as a headliner, right? These are stage shows first, and it's not necessarily a recorded album. You may or may not like Lizzo or Tool, but the stage show that they bring is unbelievable, especially the Tame Impala thing if you saw the show after LCD Sound System a couple years ago. But the I don't remember a headliner... a top three that have had this level of stage show back to back to back. Post Malone's fine, but it's not a stage show like Tool's going to be. Is that in the mind? Is that in the back of the mind at all?
Yeah, I think it is somewhat.
Because I wonder how much production costs or production in general plays into the overall booking process.
I don't know. It doesn't really not for me. What do you think?
I mean,
right? one of my favorite shows of the past whatever recent memory of Bonnaroo was Sturgill.
Right. My God, that show was so good.
You know, white
lights and four guys on a stage.
That's it.
Exactly.
No video, no moving lights, nothing. Yep. And, you know, heading, you know, from dusk till dark on the main stage at Bonnaroo and with no production and just shredded. Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, it doesn't.
Exactly. Right. Right.
You know, it's all about the musicianship and the live music aspect of it, and that's definitely where we tend to go at Bonnaroo. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? The criticism of jam band roots, that's where we started. We've certainly evolved, right, over the years. We had to, and we will continue to evolve. But it, you know, I'd say one thing that it always kind of goes back to that, those roots, is that live
show.
And, you know,
show
high level. Obviously, we understand that. And that doesn't mean it has to be a jam band, right? Right. But it's just, and to me, if you look at the undercard this year, so much of what we do still is rooted in that. You know,
how many shows you guys think you see a year?
I don't know. I mean, it's what we
do. Are you five a week? Are you a 5 a week?
With young children, not we don't, we can't, you know,
years
we,
ago,
we send yeah. the we send the young staff out for that kind of stuff. Yeah. But we see a lot of shows. We still see a ton of shows.
You must really trust your staff, because you can't see every person that you've booked. You know, you probably have not seen every
live. No.
But I think of somebody like Yola, who I think is like your secret weapon this year, who's going, I mean, she's got a Grammy nomination for crying out loud. And how you found her when you booked her, I don't know. But I got a feeling it's a Dan Arbach connection. But I love that album, and I love her so much, but I don't know what she's going to be live, and I don't know if anybody's seen her live.
And this
is where
Steve, you know, I don't know, not to toot any horns, but Steve and I have been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
I was turned on to Yola, let's call it a year and a half ago. It could have been a little less, but let's say it's about that. And kind of knew the connection with Massive Attack and her history. And then I listened. I got a couple of songs before the record came out. And again, this is where we have, you know, just being who we are in the professionals and being in the business, we get turned on to things before they're really out there. And I just remember listening to the first couple of tracks that I heard, and you just know that is going to be a thing, you know.
And he did. I mean,
so we jumped on it. We booked her. I think the first event we had her on was our inaugural Railbird Festival in Lexington, Kentucky last year, and she opened one of the stages. And since then, you know, obviously her career has really taken off. But we knew, you know, we really need to get her on Bonnaroo. But so much about an artist like that is it's you know, timing really plays into a huge part of it, right? Because it's important. I don't know what kind of cycle we're on. There's so many bands to book in any given year. And really, if you think about it, like, if you're an artist that's breaking, what's the opportunity that you have at Bonnaroo? It's really, you almost have like one shot at it, right? Because if we book you and it isn't the right time in your career, or we don't, you know, or it's not the right slot or look or whatever it may be, then the opportunity to come back is, what are we, 5 years, 4 years, five years, three? It depends on the artist and what happens in their career, but we're not really repeating an artist
very
regularly.
But
it's
the
hard.
Ones that you do, ones that you do, like, you guys can go through and probably really take some pride in the amount of artists that you think you probably broke.
started small.
Sure.
I mean, I can go off the list here. I mean, I think you broke the Alabama Shakes. I mean, I think you broke the Black Keys. Banks, and put her on a look that she hasn't had since. So,
I don't know that we're breaking any. Like, I'm just like, I hear that, and I just, I feel like, I don't,
I don't know that that's the right word. Yeah,
we're giving
we have
the opportunity with a great look, with a great, really music head audience, but I don't know that we're breaking.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it's more, especially in the southeastern region, it's like, it's very valuable to help, you know, build awareness, and we've definitely, like, that's not lost on us or anyone else, but break is not the right word. But we've also been, I think a lot of that also speaks to just being, like, engaged and being, like, you know, I was actually, I did an interview with the LA Times last week about Tame Impala, because they're doing a Tame Impala, and we've had Tame Impala on the festival three times, starting with a tent on a Sunday at 6 p.m., that was in 2013, I believe, when the, you know, the second record was just kind of breaking. They came back in 2016 and did the late night set on Second Stage, which you referenced earlier, and now they're headlining. So, you know, it's, we didn't break Tame Impala, but we knew that Tame Impala was a great band, and we, you know,
but I've been on it early. Artists that really, really thank you a lot.
Well, we provide an opportunity, but I think there's a couple of things you're missing though, right? Because we're just one part of it.
Yeah.
You know, because we book a band and give them an opportunity at Bonnaroo, that isn't the end of the story, right? To me, there's two other huge factors there. One, the artist still has to come out and perform and put on an amazing show. But then the number one thing, the reason why we get so excited to book the undercard and the early slots at Bonnaroo is because it doesn't matter if we book a band early in a 10 or on the Who stage or whatever, if nobody shows up to see them.
Yeah.
And that's why Bonnaroo is the best festival in the world, because our audience shows up to every show, because it gives us the confidence, as it really allows us to be curators and taste makers and say, hey, we really think you are going to be turned on by this.
Yeah.
We're going to put it on Bonnaroo because we have the confidence that the audience, they're showing up and they're going to go see that act.
Yep.
And then it's on the audience and the artist, whether or not that act breaks or not. It's not really, I mean, we're setting the stage, but it's not, we're not breaking anyone really. Like, I don't know if that's the right word. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. To me, it's like Lizzo. Like, Lizzo is breaking and blowing up regardless of her Bonnaroo performance. I think we enhance and maybe accelerate it with, like, a lot of media exposure. But to what Brian was saying earlier, I think one of the real challenges is the blessing and the curse. You know, everybody wants to play it. Well, that means if there's pressure coming from the artist, pressure goes to the agent and the manager, like, hey, this is really important to us, regardless of if it's the right play that year. Like what these guys are saying, Steve and Brian, and do a great job of, you only break once. You only get like one shot to hit the Bonnaroo tent and really set it on fire. And a lot of times the artist and the manager and the agent are just responding for pressure. Mm. And, you know, everybody wants to do it. And it doesn't mean it's not the right time. But it goes back to the artist and the manager, really, is where it starts. It starts with the artist and having an idea of the timing of presenting themselves in this format on this festival. And it's really like, once you get on the other side of the curtain, a lot of times it's no surprise that certain artists become successful, because all of these little decisions add up to success. When am I going to break at Bonnaroo? When am I going to play Lollapalooza ACL? Like, when is that look going to be? I want to wait and make sure that when I do it, it explodes. Mm-hmm. Not when I do it, it's a little bit of a bump.
Right.
And I think on our side, with what Steve and Brian are doing, they are like driving the ship in some ways and reaching out, but in a lot of ways, they're responding to who's reaching out to them. And their job is to figure out where the breaking moments are and to really try to find that for the year that's a year and a half out. But a lot of it, like the curse part, is coming from that pressure. Like, everybody wants to do it because everyone thinks, this will be the silver bullet that will take my career from here to here. But that's not the case unless you're ready to go.
Have you ever said no to somebody who wasn't ready?
Sure.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. I mean, this, the harsh reality is we say no a lot.
Right.
That's what I was going to say. I mean, we have to have some hard conversations year in, year out. And it all ties in really to a lot of times to what Ted was saying. It's like, you know, we get a lot of pressure and sometimes it's not the right fit for us. You know, us being Bonnaroo, it's not the right timing for the artist. And a lot of times that's a hard, you know, pill to swallow on the artist side. But but sometimes it's actually, it's interesting. There was an example this year, I'm not going to name names, but it was where we wanted them on the event and they turned it down because they didn't think it was the right look for the artist. And we didn't necessarily see eye to eye on where it fit in. And so they were like, well, we're just going to wait. And totally respected that decision, you know? And we'll probably have her on the festival next year.
Part one complete for our chat with Steve, Ted, and Brian from AC Entertainment, the guys that booked the lineup. Now, we appreciate you listening. If you were listening, I know there's some wonky Barry Corder audio issues, which here's what's crazy. It happens all the time. Barry Corder's audio always just seems to be a little off every time.
And I think I'm yelling. I think I'm screaming.
I don't think
it's so quiet.
How long have I known you? I've never heard you yell.
That's a good point. I probably haven't ever. You probably never.
I'm probably the closest person in your life that you've yelled at.
I yell at my car, and that's about it. My cat.
Yeah. There was a time where me and Barry took a little. We took a road trip to Knoxville, as you saw. But me and him took a road trip to Forecastle one year, and I annoyed him so badly at about 3 o'clock in the morning. I thought he was going to reach through the wall and choke the hell out of me.
Well, I told you about the dream that I later had where you started doing that again while we were at Bonnaroo, and I came out of the tent and just went grape ape, grabbed you by the ankles.
I might have spent the entire night sitting in one bedroom while he was in the other just yelling, Barry!
Oh, that was awful.
Barry, do you like grapes?
Bad memory.
It's very strange.
But anyway, what a interesting conversation with these guys, and what a great way to kick this year off.
Yeah, huh? How about that little nugget of information that King Lizard King Grizzard is going to be with the doing late night. That's a big piece of information. We didn't know that.
Well, not just that, but out of that conversation, not only do they know who they're going after, but where they're going to play and when.
Yeah.
That's a lot of balls in the air.
That was
to
something
try to keep straight.
We thought that we had most of this figured out. I did not think that that's how they did it.
No,
I did not think that they knew exactly where certain bands were going to play. Now I had this idea that they have to know when they're going to book somebody like Brittany Howard. She needs to know certain something like that. We know you're going to be on a Friday, and we know it's going to be somewhere between 4 and 10, but I didn't know they specifically knew exactly which slot they were going to put each and every band. And it makes me think, you know, about all the questions that we may have missed. Now, you get to watch part two next week and listen to it on Spotify, iTunes, and all of your Android devices, all your devices. But when somebody like Brittany Howard, if she were to pull out, I wonder who the backup would have been. And I know they probably wouldn't have told me because, you know, that gives a lot of things away. But, boy, what happens when somebody like that falls through? If you've already got everything already lined up on the grid and already on the schedule, who do you slide in there? Do you find somebody that's more like her? Do you find somebody that's totally just who you can get? That part I wish that I would have, you know, thought to ask.
I mean, you do it. You do the rotisserie football, and I don't know if you do baseball. But
rotisserie football.
What's it called? What's it?
That's fantasy football.
It's changed. We used to call it rotisserie. You do fantasy football. That's what I always sort of imagine. You know, is you go in with your list.
Oh yeah, picking players.
And your number one's gone.
Yeah.
And you know, depending on where you are, I mean, it's somewhat similar to that. But the other thing,
that is an interesting analogy. That is a Barry Corder specially.
Yeah. Well, you know, but you go in with your list, and I'm sure they go in with their list, but. Here in what it was Grizzard, right? That he saw at a club. Was that the act that he saw? And he's like, I know where this needs to be.
Late night at Bonnaroo.
Calling Brian and got it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know what I thought. I thought you said it right, that they go with their gut. But the fact that they have it all in their head years on out, I think we talked about driving home, how hard it would be if you dropped two people brand new in and said, go book this thing.
Right. Good luck.
Good luck.
Good luck trying to figure out this, because these guys, like we said in the show, a sponge, and they've got to be thinking about every angle, and it's like octopus arms. They've just got to always be thinking about who goes where it's going to go, if it falls through. Boy, the pressure that has, and that's why, you know, you probably give them a little bit more leniency if it's a lineup that you don't necessarily think is for you. This is really, really hard. And I don't know how some of the other festivals do it, but I don't know how the big ones like Lollapalooza. Lollapalooza is a big committee, man, a big committee of people. I don't know how Golden Voice and Coachella does their lineup, but for two guys to be able to keep all of this straight is pretty remarkable.
Not just that, but they do other events, and they admitted themselves, this one's different. And it's because, and this was fascinating to me, all of the elements that you and I have talked about and sort of come to realize that are part of this festival, the plazas, the experiences, they have to keep that in mind as well.
Yeah.
What's marketing doing? What's the plaza? What's going on in there? How is what we are doing going to work with that? I mean, so it's not just a crawl in a hole and get 80 acts or 100 acts.
Yeah.
There's a lot to consider. Yep. So.
And we appreciate you listening. We appreciate you being a Patreon. We've got some Patreons that we want to thank, and we're going to do that right here on the screen. If you're listening on the podcast version at the whatpodcast.com, we'll read them to you. But if you're on the screen, they're scrolling past us right now. You know why? Because Lord Taco is a genius, and
that's
he's figured
this
out. Yes. Patreon, since January 1st, man, we can't thank you enough. David Grimes, Liesl Condor, Frank Swanson, Phil Hanley, Dustin Gehrig, and Chloe Howe.
He took us to Camp Nut Butter in the middle of January.
Is that where we are?
That's where we are.
Wow.
That's amazing, isn't it?
I'm a little overdressed. We'll see you next week on the What Podcast, part two, happening next week. See you then.
Hey, 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 hey! How y'all feeling?
Journey through the stories that define the artists playing Bonnaroo. Who are they? What are they? What will you see? The what? Which bands? This year? That matter.
Yay.
With Brad Steiner and Barry Corder.